Dieting is such a great business model because you're never really fixed. I would see the same people coming through. I worked there for 8 years, so I would see the same people. They would come through, they would lose the weight, they would feel like, I got this, I got the weight off, I'm never coming back, I know what to do. And then in a year and a half, 2 years, they'd be right back, having gained the weight, all of it or more, back, and now they want to do it again. And they're ashamed and they feel guilty, but they're back. And they want to punish themselves all over again. And it would happen time and time again. We'd take their money, they'd go away, they'd come back, we'd take their money again.
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. Super excited to have you all listening. Very excited to have the guest on that we do today. I know a lot of you out there have probably been on a diet. If you ever told yourself something like, hey, when I finally lose the weight, then I'll start really living, then this episode is for you. Today, I'm talking with Holly Toscanini, who is an intuitive living coach and host of the quote unquote, How to Lose the Weight podcast, weight meaning W-A-I-T. She has spent decades in the heart of the weight loss and fitness industry. Just personal training, medical weight management, corporate wellness, just like all of it. She was knee deep in the diet industry, and she was the expert at teaching women how to shrink their bodies, count every calorie, and chase being the small body, and all in the name of quote unquote health. And yet, even as the scale went down, in her own personal life, her world kept getting smaller. She was in the middle of this, like, very stressful time. She'll get really into that with you and talk more about her life. But she had this moment where everything really changed for her. And so she's going to talk again more about that. But in this conversation, Holly and I really pull back the curtain on diet culture as really what it is, medically supervised starvation, and the way perfectionism, people pleasing, and patriarchy really teach women to put their lives on hold until they feel like they're ready enough or thin enough, and why waiting for the perfect body, we call it, is actually a socially acceptable form of self-abandonment. We're gonna talk about her pivot into intuitive eating, rebuilding her self-trust, and what it really looks like to stop outsourcing your worth to the scale and start listening to your own inner wisdom, especially in midlife when hormones are shifting and your body's changing, whether you want it to or not. If you are tired of starting yet another diet, tired of obsessing over the talk in your head like good food or bad foods, and tired of waiting for some time in the future when, you know, you feel like you look a certain way and finally can give yourself permission to have the life you want or do the things you want to do, this episode will give you a really compassionate, grounded place to begin. So again, like I said, really excited to bring her on. I think this is going to relate to a lot of you and hopefully get you on a path to ditching diets and onto a life where you feel much more free in your body and to do things that maybe you've been putting off. That being said, I'm going to go get her and sit back, relax, and listen. Hey. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited. I know you have quite a story and a path to getting here, so I'm just curious if you would just let us know how you got to this place in your career.
Sure. So I got into coaching early, like 2008. I started as a wellness coach and health coach. I worked for a variety of different companies doing corporate wellness coaching, medical weight management, was a personal trainer, nutrition coach, certified in everything you can think of. And I did that for a very long time. And then it was the middle of the pandemic. The world had shut down. My marriage was ending. I found myself working three jobs just to keep it all together. And I was riding the hormonal roller coaster of perimenopause right into menopause and watching my body change in ways I could not control. I was feeling the weight of emotional and physical exhaustion settling into my bones. And I was finding myself on a Zoom call with my own coach, admitting that this weight loss business that I had built, the one centered on dieting and fitness, really no longer fit the woman that I was becoming. Because for decades, I believed that if I could just get my body, everything in my life would magically click into place. And I taught women the same thing, how to manage their bodies, how to be smaller, how to chase approval by chasing some random number on a scale. But what I found was that no matter how thin I got, that hollow feeling never went away. And the more I focused on shrinking myself and my body, the smaller my world actually became. And that day on that Zoom call with my coach, I finally could name what my intuition had been whispering to me the whole time, that this was not it, that there was something more, something deeper and more meaningful for me to be doing. And the problem was, walking away from that sort of terrified me because I was afraid my clients or my audience would not understand this sort of non-diet approach to health I was going to be taking. I was afraid they'd leave and that I'd lose the credibility I'd fought so hard for. And if I'm being really honest, I was afraid to lose myself, or at least that identity that I had worn for so long. But even with all that fear, I couldn't unknow what I had realized, that promoting dieting and weight loss really felt like a betrayal, both to myself and to the woman that I had served, because I knew firsthand the damage that it caused. In the middle of heartbreak, financial strain, menopausal fog, and a global pandemic, I gave myself permission to pivot. I started speaking openly about body acceptance, intuitive eating, and the deeper spiritual journey of reconnecting with our inner wisdom. And even though I didn't have any polished plan or rebrand in mind, I just had this conviction and a growing belief that betraying myself was no longer an option. And that's how I got started. I noticed that the more I showed up as my whole messy, evolving self, the more the right kind of people found me and were interested in the work that I was doing. And the more I honored my truth, the more I attracted the women that were ready to do the same.
I'm so glad you came to the other side, obviously, but so interesting, because I'm sure people listening maybe still are on that path of feeling like, oh, if I can change my body, be smaller, I'll be happier. And you had such a long history and built a career around this. So how did you even get started in that? Was that something you were personally in the diet world for yourself and then made it a career? Or how did you get even into that path to begin with?
Absolutely. Now, this is just my own personal observation, but in my experience, I find there are two types of people that get into the fitness industry. At least, again, this is just my personal perspective. They are the people that are naturally fit and love to exercise, and it's just what they love. It's easy for them. They've got great bodies. They've never really had a problem with their weight. They just want to be fit, and it's exciting and fun for them, and they want to help other people do it. Great. Then there are those, and I found myself in this category, that struggled with their weight always. And the only way you could fix it was to focus on it all the time. And I realized that if I was going to fix myself, that I had to know everything there was to know about what I needed to do to fix it. I needed to know everything about fitness. I needed to know everything about nutrition. And I didn't want to wait and go to college, so I just got a lot of certifications and degrees, and I worked at a gym, and I worked for doctors, and I did all of the stuff that I needed to do, and I put it all into practice. I did the calorie counting. I did the diets. I did everything. I probably have 1,000 recipes in my computer right now that are still focused on high protein, low fat, low calorie, the 900 calorie a day. And don't anybody email me for them, because I will not give them to you. But I have all of these things. I did it for me. I did it because I wanted to control my body. I was convinced that the only way I could be lovable, acceptable, and confident and valuable was to be thin. And my body is not naturally thin. I'm tall, I'm curvy, I'm never going to be skinny, never, unless I am absolutely starving myself. Until I could embrace the fact about myself that this is just who I am, I tried to control it. And I thought getting into this industry was the best way to do it. I would make it my full-time job to control my body.
Okay, so yeah, and I guess that's the whole thing is that that's a message, right? It's, and I think a lot of people buy into that. Even now, I think it's getting almost worse right now. I thought it was getting better, but I think there's this change coming and we could talk about why, but there's so much about your external that makes you worthy or attractive or whatever it is. And so people are chasing, like what you said, you eventually got to that point where you said, I realized I was chasing something and it wasn't ever going to be filled by looking a certain way or weighing a certain amount. Or it was like, I'm wondering for you, as you were doing the work and working with other people, did you ever see anybody along the way get to that point and like question things and say, wait, what am I doing? Or were they completely drinking the Kool-Aid and going along with you?
When I was dieting or when I was walking away from it?
No, when you were actually working with people, like clients.
Yeah, we're all in. When I worked for a doctor in private practice, and they paid us a lot of money to put them on diets. They paid us a lot of money to tell them not to eat and to tell them what to eat and how to eat. And what was so distressing is that dieting is such a great business model because you're never really fixed. I would see the same people coming through. I worked there for 8 years. So I would see the same people. They would come through. They would lose the weight. They would feel like, I got this. I got the weight off. I'm never coming back. I know what to do. And then in a year and a half, 2 years, they'd be right back having gained the weight, all of it or more, back. And now they want to do it again. And they're ashamed and they feel guilty, but they're back. And they want to punish themselves all over again. And it would happen time and time again. We'd take their money, they'd go away, they'd come back, we'd take their money again. We never helped them figure out how to be healthy. We just taught them how to lose weight. And those two things aren't necessarily the same thing, because what I learned ultimately is that women don't need to fix themselves to start living. They don't need to shrink their bodies. They need to learn to trust themselves, trust their intuition, and develop that internal safety. Those are the anecdotes to perfectionism, body shame, and waiting for your life to begin. But it's a great business model. So yes, when I was working in the weight loss industry, when I was going through my divorce, I was working for Kaiser Permanente. And I had probably lost about 15 pounds, not because I was trying, just because I was so emotionally upset. I could not eat. I was having a lot of, you know how it is, the stress. And I walked into one of the classes and someone said, oh my God, you look amazing. And my response was, oh, thanks. I'm just walking the talk. I could not admit that my life was falling apart. So I just said, yep, I'm just doing what I tell you to do. And I felt like such a fraud. But I couldn't say, oh, and fall apart and start crying in the middle of a class I'm supposed to be leading. I'm supposed to be the example. I'm supposed to be setting the example. And on the side, I've got this whole other backstory going on about why I'm losing weight. And it had absolutely nothing to do with dieting. It had to do with my life falling apart. And yes, the weight came back. So it's not like it was gone forever. It came back.
That's a great point, is you're going through all this stress. Your body is not healthy. Your life is, you're going through all this mental stress and definitely not in a quote unquote healthy place, not emotionally stable, all these things. And yet, what do you get? The messaging like, oh, you look great.
And it's great.
That's a horrible thing. And I loved when you said too, oh, people paid us to teach them how to like basically starve themselves. It's like people are paying all this money to struggle and to essentially be tortured.
Yeah. Medically supervised starvation.
Did you ever see it that way? Or was that later that you realized that?
I did. I would see people, especially when it comes to a lot of, and everything is different now with the GLP-1 medications that are available everywhere. It's a whole different ballgame. But this was in like 2010, 2000, like around 2000, between 2010 and 2019. What we did was meal replacements. Everything was a meal replacement, and you had maybe 800 calories a day, and then you did that for 6 months, and then you were slowly put back on food, but you had to calorie count the whole time. And then there was a year or two of maintenance classes that you were supposed to attend and do and learn how to keep the weight off. And if we've learned nothing from the Biggest Loser expose, it's that your body didn't like that. Your body doesn't respond very well to that. So going through all of that, it wasn't really working. And showing people how to do this, and then on the inside going, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could live on 3 shakes, 2 bars, and some powdered soup every day. And that just didn't seem like something I could do. But here I'm telling people how to do it.
That's not even food. And I too worked at Kaiser and I knew a lot about that program, the medical weight loss program. And I was one day I actually looked at the ingredients on that product and went, this isn't even food. This is chemicals. And shocking. Yeah. And I, being the eating disorder specialist there at Kaiser, I was horrified. And case in point, I could relate a lot with you. Like a lot of the people who were in that program felt like, I guess, great on it. Like, I guess you have to buy into it when literally, not just financially, but emotionally when you're in it, because it's a big struggle. Yeah. But most of the people, I was in the mental health department, ended up seeing me after the fact because they were so distraught. Because they felt like such a failure. They said, again, I've lost it and regained it. Like, it's me. I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what diets really end up doing, is you feel like you're the failure when you gain it and more back. Mm-hmm. But nobody really says, hey, wait a minute, this is setting you up to fail. Like the diet is the failure.
Exactly. And in the beginning, as a behavioral specialist, you I'm sure you've seen this, in the beginning of those programs, you're on a high. You're on a control high. It's completely different. There's a nuance to it. You feel hope. You see the numbers change. Your clothes are getting smaller. There's all of this excitement. And then you hit a plateau after so long. And then it gets rough. And then you get hungry. And then you get really tired. And then the holidays come. And then, you know, there's all these struggles. And then it's summer. And then your friends are doing things and you can't participate. And then you cheat. And then you feel guilty. And then you find yourself making excuses. And so then that's when that sort of pattern of insanity starts to come along. And yeah, in the beginning, there is a lot of excitement around it. It's a high that you get on. And then later on, there's the letdown of, I can't keep this up forever.
No, to your point, okay, you're talking about like eating powdered soup and very, I don't even know what they are, but these bars or whatever. But think about like, how do you live a life for the rest of your life? Think about going on vacation, right? Think about going to a wedding, a party, whatever. What are you going to do? This is not something you can sustain for the rest of your life. You can't just eat these things for the rest of your life and sustain like happiness and joy and like adventure. And what are you going to do? So that's when I really start to, I'd love to hear more about what you think about this, but really living a life where it doesn't revolve around what you're eating.
Yeah. Yeah. So for the record, I am not anti-weight loss. If someone chooses to change their body, that is completely up to you. What I am against is being told that my only value in life is being a certain size. That if my body looks anything other than an Instagram model, then I am not a valid human being, that I'm less than. And unfortunately, women, we put our lives on hold until we feel good enough. And what I see is that someday, oh, I'll do it someday when I'm thin enough, when I'm wealthy enough, when whatever, when the kids are out of the house, someday becomes a lifelong holding pattern. Someday is a moving target. And the waiting isn't about discipline or timing or self-care, it's about conditioning. And we live in a culture that teaches women from a very young age to wait our turn, to wait until we look the part, wait until we're enough by somebody else's standards. And all that waiting is really a socially acceptable form of self-abandonment. When it comes to changing our bodies and looking a certain way, fine, if you want to do that's great. What I'm against is, one, being told that's how we're supposed to look. Everybody should be entitled to their own body size and shape. There's a lot of different sizes out there. We should embrace them all. The other thing is, I don't feel like being told there is one way to eat is very helpful either, because then it discounts other cultures, it discounts other lifestyles. So really finding a way that works for you, which is where I got into intuitive eating, was I had to find something that worked for me. And as I learned more about it, applied it to myself and used it with my clients, I learned that intuitive eating is one of the most flexible forms of learning how to have a new relationship with food that I found, because it worked for every one of my clients when they applied it in their own way.
So let's get back to that like Zoom meeting you were having with your coach. Like, what was that like for you to realize, okay, hold on, this is not about what I thought it was. Like, I've been chasing something else. Was that something that you had as an epiphany during that session, or was that something that had been like getting to you over time?
It was an evolving conversation for sure. Okay. Figuring out that the dissatisfaction I was having was my weight was changing. And I've always been someone who struggled to keep a what I considered a healthy weight, a good low weight. And I always felt like a failure if my weight went too high. And we always get very excited when our weight is smaller. I always wanted to be smaller. No matter how small I went, I always wanted to be just one more size smaller. And it didn't matter how small I got, I was never happier. So I had to learn to let that go and just find a place where I could live my life without making myself insane. I saw it as a Venn diagram where sanity and vanity overlapped. That kind of happy spot in the middle, that's where I had to learn to live. And we were talking about that very thing. And I realized that if it was true for me, it also had to be true for my clients. And that we had to find a way to be happy and to be healthy and have those things overlap in a way that made sense. And being willing to let go of all of the diets and all of the recipes and all of the prescriptive things that I knew was scary. And when I stopped working for the doctor, I was still working for Kaiser Permanente. I had begun, I still work for a doctor, but I work for a plastic surgeon. We don't do anything with weight loss. But when I got out of medical weight loss, I realized my future was in a non-diet approach to health and happiness. And that's where I felt the most comfortable returning to that sense of trusting myself. And getting into intuitive eating also led me back into rediscovering my sense of spirituality and intuitive nature. And I realized that so many women abandon our intuition and kind of abandon that part of ourselves because we're told to trust everything on the outside, not ourselves. And I discovered that there were three forces that really keep us in this cycle. The first is perfectionism, because it convinces us that we have to be flawless to be enough, right? And then the next was people-pleasing, because we were told to put everybody else first, be the good girl, and over time, we forget what we even want. And then the third was diet culture and patriarchy, because it teaches us that our worth is tied to our appearance and youth, and that we've got to shrink ourselves to be lovable, valuable, desirable, that we should do whatever we can to stay looking as young and thin as we possibly can. And that's when I realized I can't play into this anymore. As someone who considers myself a feminist, I could not play into diet culture, especially when I saw the direct correlation between patriarchy. So that was the end. That was the line in the sand for me.
Okay, so then you have this whole career, like you've established this. So yeah, I can see that would be very scary. Like, how do you pivot at that point when you have this light bulb moment and then you're still working with people and this is like how you built like your reputation essentially. So what do you do? Because I think that would be scary. Oh my gosh, what are people going to do? Are they going to jump ship? Or like, how do you even change?
The first thing I did was educate myself. I had to find another coach. I worked with a woman who is a non-diet coach. I had to learn more about what that meant and how that would work. Working with people when we're not talking about weight loss solely, we're talking about body image, we're talking about intuitive eating. I had to learn all of that for myself, but also how to be a coach for others. So that was the beginning of re-educating myself as a coach in those areas. That was really important. And then the other part was about giving myself permission to reconnect with my own intuition. I had been involved in another spiritual community and was actually a teacher in that community and had not been involved with them in a very long time because I abandoned that part of myself when I was so heavily involved in my diet culture life. And I decided it was time to get back involved with that. And it's trusting myself and my intuition has really been about setting self-trust as the foundation for healing, because recovering from all of those forces really requires a sense of internal safety. And it's not about needing more confidence, it's about needing self-trust. And really, self-trust is the practice of choosing yourself before the world gives you permission. It's the practice of moving, even when you're not sure, and saying, I don't have it figured out, but I know I can figure it out. It's really the practice of tuning into your intuition and always trusting your gut instincts first, even if it's going against what everybody else around you is saying. And it's built through small things that you do every single day. Self-trust is really built in the tiny moments when you choose yourself first. And that's where I had to go back to. I had to re-educate myself. I had to be willing to be a beginner again and just put those things into practice. And I developed a community of other coaches that I still am in touch with today that were the biggest support system and really my saving grace. Having those other women that were doing this work with me and having the same struggles was the absolute best thing I could have found. And community is really important, whether you are a coach or whether you're just someone who is struggling to try something new. Having a community of friends really got me through my worst time in my divorce and in my career pivot.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think that's the hardest thing when you're really in the dieting, like you said, like your world becomes so small.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest thing is, at least what I found, a lot of people who have been chronically dieting or have eating disorders, it's so hard to change because if they've been doing it long enough, maybe they have burned bridges with people or been isolating a long time or declined a lot of social invitations because the eating disorder came first. So it can be really difficult to make the changes because now that's not only their identity, but their whole world. There's no support system.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you were able to find that and do that. But I don't know if, like, in your coaching, you found that's hard for people.
It can be. And it's one of the reasons why in my coaching programs, I always emphasize the importance of community and try to create a sense of community with my clients. The group coaching process, I know sometimes it's hard. A lot of people want to be a part of the group, but they don't always want to participate. They just kind of want to sit on the sidelines and they want to listen, which is fine. But being willing to have a little give and take and have some vulnerability is important. It's the only way you can really move past the fear and be able to reconnect with your intuition. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between intuition and fear. Fear is really loud and urgent and restrictive, and intuition is more quiet and steady and neutral. And when you're talking about these things in a group of people, you start to see the difference. You start to see how fear can be restrictive, but intuition is really more directive.
So, like, for you, were you disconnected at all from your body and how you were feeling? Because I know a lot of times when people, especially if they've been really restrictive with their calories or things like that, like they're not feeling a whole heck of a lot. And I oftentimes find that just even realizing what hunger feels is so hard. They don't know what starving feels like. They don't know where they're at on the hunger scale. For anyone listening, if they're saying, how do I even start this? Because maybe they've been chronically dieting for years and they've been told what to eat.
Yeah.
Quote unquote experts. And I found that a lot too. But for anyone listening, what would you say might be a good first step if they're thinking, yeah, I want to stop this. I want to get off the train, but I don't know
Honestly,
what to do.
I think the best thing to do is to explore intuitive eating. And even if it's just about buying the book, start there. Hunger can be scary when you've been afraid of it your whole life, when it's been the bad guy forever. We are taught to not trust our bodies, to not trust our cravings, to not trust hunger. We're told emotional eating is a bad thing. We're told that there was some person on Instagram talking about how we shouldn't enjoy our food, or I don't know, some nonsense. It's like food is so much more than just sustenance, right? It's emotional connection. It's cultural heritage. It's celebration. It's how we commiserate. It's so much more meaningful than just, I've got some nutrition I'm putting into my body for the calories. So giving yourself permission to feel your hunger and to indulge your cravings is scary. At least it can be. And I know when I started intuitive eating for the first time, it was freeing and frightening all at the same time to say, I can have whatever I want. There's nothing good food. There's nothing bad food. It's just food. And I am not a good or bad person because of the choices I make. I'm just me making a choice. If I choose to have nachos for breakfast, I'm going to have nachos for breakfast. If I choose to have steamed rice and broccoli for dinner, great. But it doesn't make me a good or bad person. I'm not a healthy or an unhealthy person because of the choices I make. So trying to unlearn all of that was really the first sort of brain speed bump I had to get over. My brain was like, what do you mean I can have whatever I want? Getting to the point where I was okay with that. But then I have to say this, and sometimes it's a little bit of a warning. Your body weight will change and it might go up, and that has to be okay. It will eventually stabilize. But I think a lot of people in the beginning think that intuitive eating is another diet, and it's not a diet, right? It's a way of reconnecting with your body. So once you find a way to reconnect with your body and you practice, and it might take years. I know it did for me to find a place where your body stabilizes and you're like, okay, this is my sanity and vanity moment. I found that perfect space in the Venn diagram where I can exist peacefully with my body. And that's the ultimate goal.
And I think, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because it is the biggest fear most people have is I've quote unquote worked so hard for this and I'm going to lose all these years of the hard work I've done, or I'm feeling out of control, scary. And I think that's the big reason people revert back to dieting is, oh, wait, I want the structure. It's so much easier if people tell me what to do. This is scary. And the noise does come in, right? The, wait, no, of course there's good food and bad food. What are you talking about? And the fear of, oh gosh, if you say I can have nachos for breakfast, that's all I'm going to eat, or whatever it is, right? It's like,
yeah.
It's so scary. And people do really think intuitive eating is a diet. They go about it with that kind of mentality. And so I'm curious, like in your experience, what do you see people really muck up with intuitive eating in terms of following it like it's a diet?
I think the first thing that they do is, first of all, most women I have worked with are terrified of gaining weight. And so just getting to a place where they're not going to freak out if their weight changes, I think that's a big hurdle. And then people say, if I'm listening to my body, then my body will naturally know it's supposed to be thin, and so I won't ever be hungry, and it'll just be really easy. I won't ever get cravings again. The other thing they forget is that your hormones are going to dictate what your body is doing. Got news for you. When you get to menopause, things are going to change. Your body won't respond the way that it has in the past. So being willing to ride that sort of wave of changes that your body goes through is really important. And if you constantly try to control your body without embracing the changes that you're going through, you will always be in a state of panic. You will always feel slightly out of control. And so if you can just let go of that and understand that there is a beauty and a grace in being at one with your body, in embracing the sort of feminine nature that you are, that it gets easier. And I'm not going to say I am never still bothered by images of maybe myself when I was thinner or younger. I'll find a dress stuffed in the corner that I can't wear anymore. And it's, but you got to let it go. We are always evolving. And we should never try to hold on to the past when it comes to things like that. So when it comes to intuitive eating, first realize that your body is going to change. It may not be the change that you absolutely want to see in the beginning, but it will change a little bit. The other thing is, it's not going to be a diet. So stop trying to count calories and eat intuitively. It doesn't work that way. The other thing is watching out. There's some part of it that says watch out for the food police. And we always think of the food police as being people around you that tell you what to eat or how to eat. But the food police live in your head. It is the years of cultural conditioning from diet culture and patriarchy that say, eat this, don't eat that, you're a good person, a bad person. It's the sort of mental chatter that we have tucked away in our brains from years of hearing it that can really be the most damaging.
So true. And that is, I think, the hardest part is it's so ingrained in there, like automatically. Just I hear people even who don't really have any disordered eating, but there's still these, it's just, I think, part of our culture, right? The part of the common language of, oh, that's healthy, that's unhealthy, that's the, when I think there's this idea of when you're having all that chatter in there, it's, oh, see, everybody thinks like, everybody's like this, that's normal. But I don't think a lot of people, when they're saying that, really feel it to the same degree of when you're having all that chatter in there. Maybe they're saying healthy, but they're not feeling some emotional tie to it the same way you're talking about.
Yeah, and I just cringe every time I hear somebody say something like, oh, I'm going to be good today and have a salad. I'm like, ugh, what are you talking about? Or, oh, I was bad, I had cake. I'm like, oh, Lord. Here we go again. Let's have a talk.
Me and you both, I always say, oh gosh, okay. I'm not. It's hard. That's a big conversation. Yeah. So I don't know. So now what's your main thing right now? Are you just mostly coaching?
Yeah, I am coaching. I have a podcast too called How to Lose the Weight, spelled W-A-I-T. It's about not putting your life on hold any longer, not about weight loss at all. I still work in addition to doing all my fun stuff. I am currently working on the next iteration of the Reinvention Code, which is a course I do 4 times a year. It's starting again in January 2026. Nice. So I've got lots of fun, exciting things coming up.
So can we talk more about what's coming up in January, the Reinvention Code? So for people who don't know.
Yeah. So the Reinvention Code really got started as a process of taking women through this sort of journey of reconnecting with your intuition and figuring out what your next steps are going to be, what your next iteration or your next pivot in your life is going to be. And it really started developing out of a series of podcasts that I did where we were talking about reconnecting to your intuition and then figuring out what your next pivot was going to be. It began with a 3-step framework, which is where I walk women through a process of getting honest with themselves, figuring out what they're really waiting for, where they're stuck, and then calling it out with compassion, of course, helping them get really clear on what they truly want, not what somebody told them they should want, and really letting their inner voice speak, and then figure out how to get moving by learning to take an intuitive step forward, even if it's small, even if it's messy, especially if it's a little scary, and then giving them some practical shifts to start practicing and taking them through a process where they're in a community and they can do it in a safe way. And we really learn to stop outsourcing our decisions, to notice where in our lives we're still shrinking, and we learn to take aligned micro actions every day. I don't think you should have to wait for confidence to take action. I really believe that confidence is created through action, and that's what we focus on.
Okay. So if people want to work with you or they want to learn more about what's going on in January, how can they find you?
Yeah, definitely find me through the podcast, How to Lose the Weight. It's on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or you can go to my website, hollytoscanini.com. On the website, you can also take the 5-minute midlife confidence quiz. I created this quiz because a lot of women don't realize where their self-trust is really broken down. So I created the quiz to help them identify their unique confidence pattern. It shows you what part of your inner confidence really needs attention. So if you're ready to stop waiting for someday and rebuild your confidence to trust yourself again, the 5-minute midlife confidence quiz is really the best place to start. It's free. And when you take it, you will get a personalized email that comes with some personalized tools and resources for your particular midlife confidence type. So that's the best place to go and get some information.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh, Holly, this has been so fun to talk to you. I love when I talk to somebody who's so aligned with all the things we talk about on this podcast. Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castagnini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.